All right, all right, all right. Welcome to another edition of Shabbat Lounge. And as always, Jake and I are glad to see you here. Hey, Jake.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. And as always, we appreciate anybody that tuned in. And we ask, we do appreciate those of you that have gone into iTunes and rated us. We appreciate the thumbs up anywhere you get that, or stars, or any place you can rate us. We appreciate that. And we also appreciate if you socially share this with people, if you share this on Facebook, if you can share this in WordPress, any account you have from Twitter. And you can find us in multiple places. It's SabbathLounge.com, Twitter, not on Instagram. Maybe soon, but not right now. But there's lots of places you can find, and you can just Google Sabbath Lounge and you'll find us. So, but we're glad you joined us this evening, or today, or morning, whenever you're listening to this.
Yeah, whenever you happen to tune in.
Yes. And so, but we are definitely glad you're here. And so tonight we're going to talk about Tabernacle, is what we're looking at here. And so I'm going to make this a little bit bigger. And so when we are looking at the tabernacle, we studied this recently. And so up in the top right-hand corner here, you can see someone put an American football field here to kind of compare the size of this. And so, you know, so would you say it's almost half of a football field?
It's probably like a quarter, right? Mm-hmm. Because you cut it in half the other way, too.
Yeah. But half of the length, maybe, yes. And then a half of the width there, too. So anyway, so, and this gives you a model. Now, there are some, this is probably the most traditional, most commonly accepted model. You know, there is Andrew Hoyt out there that said it was a dome, so, which is kind of interesting. So that's something to research, but not today. We're going with this model.
For clarity and understanding purposes.
Yeah. Not trying to make any kind of statements, and you know, it could be the round model. I don't know, but one day we'll find out.
Yeah, one day we'll find out. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when we come into the tabernacle, especially the folks out in the desert who had the tabernacle like this, and you know, they were basically entering Yahuwah's house when they came in. And there were rules, lots of rules about, not only were there rules about how to build this house and what was supposed to be in it, very specific rules. You know, Moses, you know, laid it all out early, and, you know, of all these things that had to be built and the tools and the supplies that they needed. And so, Jake, you noticed something here about the layers of skin. 9, 10, 11, 12, what were you going to say about that?
Yeah, so something interesting, I was like, I wonder if there's some correlation to the, since this is going to represent, we'll see how it kind of represents our body in a way, and I was wondering how these four curtains that go cover the temple area, how, like to me it looks like skin, and I was like, well, how many layers of skin do we have? And so, and because, right, it is skins that cover it. So that makes you think, well, how many layers of skin do we have? Well, we have if you're like really getting into the nitty gritty and the, you know, your science guys tell you, you got like 5 layers in the outer and 3 layers on the inner, but really you got the dermis, you got the epidermis. So, and then you have like your hair, and then you wear clothes. So, and I don't know if this is, you know, what Yahweh's saying with this or anything like that, but I just thought it was interesting because you have the badger skins, which call that the dermis. Then you have the ram skins, it would be your epidermis, and then the goat's hair, like your hair on your body, and then the curtain of fine linen, which would be like your clothes.
Yeah, that's good. You know, and we're here because, as we talked about in our Torah scripture when we read this, you know, couldn't help but think about, you know, how does this relate to you and I today? What are things we're supposed to take away from this? And that's why we're here. So, the tabernacle. And the next one is just another image, another representation of the tabernacle. And still, I've got the question there, how do you act when you're in someone else's home? And so hopefully, when you went as a child and you got invited over to your friend's house, you didn't act like this girl was doing. So your mother would be horrified because she probably told you things like, while you're at Johnny's, make sure you wash your hands before you eat. Make sure you don't burp at the table or fart. Make sure that if food is put before you, that you eat it and you say, thank you, ma'am. That was delicious, even if you wanted to vomit. Did you ever hear things like that before?
Similar to that, yeah. Yeah.
Maybe not those exact
words. Use your
words.
Napkin, not your sleeve.
Yes.
That kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
And so there are rules when you go to someone's house. So, you know, my mother always had a sign that I can remember. So when I became part of this foster family, they added on to our house, and the workers, when they were working on that house, several of those guys spit, and it really bothered my mother. And I remember after that, she put up a sign in her kitchen that said, no spitting. You know, that was one of her rules,
yeah.
Which, you know, that's a good rule in the kitchen.
Yeah.
I think so. Most people have no problem with that rule. So anyway, definitely there's table manners. And so when you go into the tabernacle, everything there is reflecting Yeshua. And so we'll start with this lamp. And so what did Yeshua say he was?
He is the light of the world.
That's right, light of the world. And so what other light was in the tabernacle?
It was the lamp, the menorah.
Yeah. So
that was about it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's covered up. You know, so there's no skylight in this tabernacle. We know that for sure. It didn't have big windows. I guess when someone came through, it had to be a flash of light. But Yeshua was the light, just like he's the light of the world. He's the light of the tabernacle. He's the light here. And this lamp is fed by oil. And we're going to do another teaching about light and oil where we go a little bit more detail and talk about the gold here. And we're kind of just kind of touch the surface on a few things here, and we'll do more details later. But Jake, would you read that? John 8:12.
Sure. Then spoke Yeshua again unto them, saying, I am the light of the world. He that follows me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life.
Okay. Seems pretty straightforward, huh?
It seems that way.
Yeah. So, and we probably have all heard that many times. Psalm 119:105, your word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. John 1, the word became flesh. In the beginning was the word, and the word was with Yahuwah, and the word was Yahuwah. He was with Yahuwah in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, has not overcome it. So right there in John, he tells us what these things are. So let's just kind of take a minute here and put these two passages together. So what is the lamp?
The lamp is a light to your path.
Right. It's the word.
Yeah.
So his word is that light. But then what does it say about Yeshua?
Yeshua is the word.
He's the light.
And the light, right. So through the transitive property, yes. We're going to say that Yeshua...
I was never very good at the transitive property, though. So I was the student that had to take, I don't know what it was called. It was math for dummies, remedial
math.
Maybe. Uh-huh.
Okay.
And I remember at some point taking that, and I took Algebra 1, and I did make it to Algebra 2, but it seems like I failed at least 1 6-weeks of one of those.
Okay.
So. You were speaking of things that kind of make me want to curl up into a fetal position and cry for my mother.
So this is beyond. Okay. let me break it down for you.
Okay.
So if A equals B and B equals C.
C squared?
Then A equals C. All right? If the word equals light and Yeshua equals the word, Yeshua equals light.
Exactly. Right?
So.
Exactly.
I think that's what we're trying to get at.
Yes, yes. And with the Pythagorean theorem, we'll leave that one out for today. And that A squared plus B squared equals C squared?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Hey, I got
something.
I remembered something. I did well in geometry. I like geometry.
Geometry's fantastic.
I got geometry.
That's well, then you would have been able to make a tabernacle.
Yes, apparently so.
That's all it took.
And would you read these for us?
Sure. So we're in John 6, starting in 30 here.
And I believe this is King James.
All right. They said, therefore, unto him, what sign showest thou then, that we may see and believe thee? What dost thou work? Our fathers did eat manna in the desert, as it is written. He gave them bread from heaven to eat. Then Yeshua said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of Elohim is he which comes down from heaven and gives life unto the world. Then said they unto him, Rabbi, evermore give us this bread. And Yeshua said to them, I am the bread of life. He that comes to me shall never hunger, and he that believes on me shall never thirst.
All right. So here we clearly see, once again, we saw about the light. Now he's clearly saying, hey, I'm the bread. I am the true bread. Your forefathers had bread that didn't satisfy them. But I have real bread that satisfies you. You won't ever, when you come to me, you're not going to hunger. You're not going to thirst ever again.
Right. So how does that tie in with the tabernacle, Matt?
Yeah. So in the tabernacle, we definitely have the bread represented, and we have the light represented. The bread is the show bread. We saw it in that earlier slide when it's spelled funny, like they spelled it S-H-E-W. But clearly that bread and the light are representing Yeshua.
Yeah,
and though they were there, he was there all along,
right,
from the beginning, and so we've got the picture there of this rendering from this video that we have, and so I think it's pretty interesting to take a look at this, and so we're just going to play a section of this, and as it goes in to, and it shows the different skins, and then the incense burning on the altar. And a close-up of the lamp, which is Yeshua, and the bread, which is Yeshua. And did we not discuss, I paused it just too slow there, that those frankincense, maybe, incense on
yeah.
the table? And the vessel you said was for liquid offerings?
That's correct.
And some people said that these were 12 cakes representing the 12 tribes.
Right.
Which is kind of interesting. So, but Yeshua is saying, I'm the light and I'm that bread that are right on that table. And so if you've never checked this out, it is kind of interesting to see some of these animations of how the tabernacle was put together, what it might have looked like, what was inside of it. We clearly don't know for sure. But boy, every time I see that, what do you think of right there when that happens?
Why don't you tell me what you think of?
I think of, I can't believe you don't know this. I think of Indiana Jones and the when they open up the ark and all their faces melt.
Oh, yep. Yep. See, I was thinking, oh, that reminds me of something biblical.
Oh, yes. So, yes. Sorry.
I wasn't sure where you wanted me to go there, so I figured you better take it.
Yes. You weren't picking up the sticks I was laying down.
No.
So sometimes it's
Shabbat, so.
Yes. Sometimes I don't even pick up these sticks, so. So did we do?
Yeah, we read. No, we did not read this. Yeah.
So let's get back to this, John 6:36. Would you read that?
Sure. But I said unto you that you also have seen me and believe not. All that the Father gives me shall come to me, and him that comes to me I will in no wise cast out. For I came down from heaven, not to do my own will, but the will of him that sent me. And this is the Father's will which has sent me, that of all which he has given me I should lose nothing, but should raise it up again at the last day. And this is the will of him that sent me, that everyone which sees the Son and believes on him may have everlasting life, and I will raise him up at the last day. The Jews then murmured at him because he said, I am the bread which came down from heaven.
You know, and when I read that, it's that verse 41 that I really wanted to focus on. You can almost see them in the background with their hands in their ears, just like, ah, I can't believe he said that. You know, so why do you think that was so upsetting to them? Clearly it bothered them. They murmured.
I see them going, pointing a finger saying, blasphemer. Mm. So I think that's kind of the thought process there.
Yeah. Yeah. And clearly they knew what was in this tabernacle, and they knew these things, and they knew that he is making a connection, that all those things were connected, and they knew it.
Yeah.
So in our modern mind, sometimes we don't connect it that way. And then Matthew 26 for us.
And as they were eating, Yeshua took bread and blessed it and broke it and gave it to the disciples and said, take, eat, this is my body. And he took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them, saying, drink you all of it, for this is my blood of the New Testament, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. But I say unto you, I will not drink henceforth of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom.
Well, we'll go back here if I can figure that out. Okay. So once again, he's telling his close friends here, his disciples, you know, this bread is me. I am the bread of life. And they clearly, they started to understand it. You know, did they completely understand it? You can make an argument for sure that they didn't quite understand what he was saying. And they probably had puzzled looks on their face like, what?
Yeah, I think for the most part, all this stuff was over their heads. They weren't really picking up what he was putting down.
Yeah. So, but once again, it definitely ties in with these other scriptures and makes sense there. And then Matthew 5:17-23.
You blind fools. Now, fools meant something completely different back then, I think. It was a little more harsh than we make it now.
Yeah.
You blind fools. What is more important, the gold or the temple that made the gold holy? Again, you say, to swear an oath by the altar doesn't mean a thing, but to swear an oath by the gift on the altar means a person must keep his oath. You blind men, what is more important, the gift or the altar that makes the gift holy? To swear an oath by the altar is to swear by it and by everything on it. To swear an oath by the temple is to swear by it and by the one who lives there. And to swear an oath by heaven is to swear by Elohim's throne and the one who sits on it.
So it is kind of an interesting concept here where it kind of goes back to me. I don't know what your thoughts are, but, you know, the heart or the intention of how you're doing some things. That, yes, you can go through the motions of doing something properly in the way it's supposed to be, technically supposed to be done. But that doesn't mean you did it cheerfully. You know, for instance, you know, great example, our own children. You know, there are times when you've asked your child to do something and they're just kind of like, and kind of,
you like that. You yes, like when they do that.
Yes, and they begrudgingly do it and kind of do it about halfway. And, you know, like, I'm going to put my toys up and they're just like, you know, just no effort, no care.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. You know, he wants our hearts to be in these things and not just do them to do them. And I think that's where one of the areas the Pharisees got in trouble is they just did to check off a list.
To look the part.
Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts about this piece here?
To me, when I'm seeing this, I see kind of a progression here. And it's kind of back to something I had said in a previous video that we had put out, where everything leads back to that first cause, right? They're starting with, okay, you're going to swear on the thing, the gift put on the altar. Well, the altar makes it holy. And then, well, what makes the altar holy, right? And then down, you know, it keeps going back and back until the first cause of the throne and whoever and who it is sitting on the throne. Mm-hmm. So that's what I think of with this.
Yeah, that's good. So, and like I said, we'll talk more about the gold, and this is going to come up again in a future podcast. And then he's continuing, and then read this for me, please. Right.
You blind men, what is more important, the gift or the altar that makes the gift holy or set apart? To swear an oath by the altar is to swear by it and by everything on it. To swear an oath by the temple is to swear by it and by the one who lives there. And to swear an oath by heaven is to swear by Elohim's throne and the one who sits on it. So the question here, right, is, well, who are these blind men? Who is blind?
Yes, and I put for emphasis religious leaders.
Yeah.
So, and then I also added at the bottom, the altar defined what it meant.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't, you know, and I think this can go touch on a lot of things, but, you know, people want to, you know, what we're not saying is you can't, it does matter the heart, what you're, you know, how you do these things. But you also can't take it to the other side and go, well, I have this Christmas tree and I don't make it about.
But he knows about what I mean. That.
He knows how I mean this. Yeah. He knows I mean this for him. Don't pay any attention to the fact that I bow down to it to get these gifts. And I'm on my hands and knees as I bow down and worship this tree. But that's not what I mean.
Right.
So I don't think that we're saying that.
Right.
So, but definitely, but it is an interesting concept to look at for sure. Was there anything else you had?
Nope.
Okay. And then I started studying how the blood was put on here. And so there's a reference to the bloodline. And so when you go back and you read about how some of the procedures for these sacrifices, there's some very specific things. And so the process of the offering was defined by what the sacrifice was. There were different procedures for different offerings. Sometimes that was something the priest had to determine. Sometimes the person coming to the priest would say, you know, this is my whatever offering. And but on the bloodline, some of the blood went on the ground. Some of it went up on top of the horns. And so the horns were these little triangle things at the top. And then, you know, so it just went in different places. And in verse 2, I wish I would have said where that scripture came from.
You know, verse 2.
Verse 2.
Open your Bible and go to verse 2.
Verse 2. Many.
This is probably in Exodus.
Probably.
In the third. Late 20s,
probably
30s.
Yeah, somewhere in there. And he says, take some of the bull's blood and put it on the horns of the altar with your finger. Pour the rest of it out at the bottom of the altar. And so, you know, you can make a strong case that when Yeshua dies, you know, this is something, I'm not saying I have this figured out, but definitely there's a connection between Yeshua and how his blood is shed on the cross and this altar. I don't know exactly what it is, but part of his blood.
So let me
bounce
off of that. So there's horns on the altar, like the thorns in his head, which when they push down on it, right, that would make him bleed. Yeah. And then when they stab him in the end, you know, I'm sure some blood came out also.
Yeah, which and would, it had to go on the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I definitely think there's some interesting tie-ins. Do I know what this means? No, maybe someone out there listening can shed some light on this idea of the bloodline and the significance of why certain blood and certain sacrifices are spread at different points on the altar. And then in 15 of Mystery Chapter, that was good.
You have Google nowadays. You can find this.
Yes, yes, you can. Take one of the rams, then Aaron and his sons will place their hands on its head, slaughter it, take the blood, and throw it against the altar on all the sides. So once again, here you've got blood being thrown kind of in this middle layer. So we talked about the horns, we talked about on the ground, and now for some reason, this blood is thrown against the altar on the sides. So, I don't know. It's just, kind of, like I said, it's interesting to me. And then you've got the priest here. And so he's got quite a fancy outfit here. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see someone going out, you know, when you're not in quarantine, going out for a night on the town dressed up like that. You might get a few looks for sure. So,
yeah, definitely.
Anytime a man wears a skirt, that pretty much gets people's attention.
Yeah, and being a man and not being intimately aware of the garb of a lady.
Yes.
It looks to me more like a dress than a skirt.
Maybe so. Maybe. Yes, I don't really know all those terms very well. I'm glad you do.
I'm all over it. Yeah.
Yes. So
I clearly know all of that.
Yes, you do. And so in this one, it says, take some of the blood that's on the altar and some of the anointing oil and sprinkle it on Aaron and his clothes and his sons and their clothes. And this way, Aaron, his sons, and their clothes will be holy. So once again, this time the blood is going on the person and on their clothes. So, you know, it seems kind of like a bloody mess for one thing, for sure. So,
on Aaron and his garments, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is, all right. I was right. We're in Exodus chapter 29. So.
Okay, good. Thank you for helping me be straight.
Now, wait, go back to that real quick. If we got a second.
Oh, did I go back too far?
Go back. There you go. So early on, like in our Torah walk, we're like, we're like reading through this, and we were in this position of, you know, we're not taking anyone's word for any of this stuff. We're reading it for ourselves and see what we come up with. Mm-hmm. That way we can tell if people are, you know, trying to mess with us when they tell us what these things are saying.
Right.
And so I have a picture somewhere of we were reading through this with the kids, and I'm like trying to draw out this guy in these clothes, and he looked kind of leprechaunish, but to me, I thought it was a fantastic drawing, and it almost lines up with this. So I was impressed with how accurate we were able to get it. So you don't need this stuff to understand your Bible. Just read through it, think it out logically, take your time, and you'll come up with the way this stuff's supposed to look.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's very similar to this.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I wish we had your drawing here. We could pop it in here.
I'll find it somewhere.
And then people could vote.
I know I still have it. I'll find it somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we should show it to people. And then once a year, Aaron must make peace with Yahuwah by putting blood on its horns. Once a year for generations to come, blood from the offering must be placed on the altar to make peace with Yahuwah. It is most holy to Yahuwah. And so this is the blood going on the horns, which Jake also ties in exactly what you said, because once a year, this is talking about the Day of Atonement, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I would say that.
Yeah. And so clearly there is a direct connection with the Day of Atonement in Yeshua, for sure. And in the blood that was spilled, making atonement for our sins. So, and then in Exodus 29:10, would you read this on the left-hand side?
All right. Bring the bowl to the front of the tent of meeting, and Aaron and his sons shall lay their hands on its head, slaughter it in Yahweh's presence at the entrance to the tent of meeting. Take some of the bull's blood and put it on the horns of the altar with your finger, and pour out the rest of it at the base of the altar.
So once again, you have them doing it on the horns and pouring it out. So And so you've got two different places where the blood is put. And then I put kind of my own note here that Yeshua, his blood spilled on the ground at the base of the altar. So in Genesis 22:2, it said, "Take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on the mountains of which I shall tell you." In 2 Chronicles 3:1, "Then Solomon began to build the house of Yahuwah in Jerusalem on" where? "Mount Moriah, where Yahuwah had appeared to David, his father, in the place that David had appointed on the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite." So it is believed that this very spot where Yeshua, where his blood dripped on the ground, is the very spot where this altar was.
Right. Yeah. It's the understanding is that where Isaac was offered and where the temple was is the same place that the cross stood, the Staros, when Yeshua was put on it.
Mm-hmm. And I hope that it transitioned and you can see this. But if you click on that link, if you're watching it later, there is a link where someone has a supposed picture of this hill of Golgotha, as some people might say, and he does a really good job. And I have no idea who this is or what he believes or what he thinks, but he kind of lays out, makes the case for all the things that we just talked about. And he does the tabernacle, and he talks about the sheep gate, Damascus gate, and then he shows you Jeremiah's grotto and the hill of Calvary, and about Ezekiel and his connection. So I don't know. It's definitely an interesting concept and something worth spending some time researching if you find yourself with time on your hands, which some people do. So
especially right now.
Yes. That's right. So I need to go. There I am. So anyway, that's definitely an interesting tie-in to some of that that we just talked about. And then I put this chart in there. So in the Torah reading, we are about to go into a section where we're reading about some offerings and some very specific details. And so this person, don't know who they are, they divided it into a sweet, savory, and restoring. And so they classified them as a peace offering, meal offering, burnt offerings, trespass offerings, and sin offerings. And it shows you the gifts that were used for the different kinds. And, you know, one thing that I noticed, because I read ahead, and about the there's an exception made for poor people in this, which is pretty fascinating. And not only it's multiple things. So like, if you can't do this, then you can do this. If you can't do this, you can offer some flour, and like everybody can offer flour.
Right.
So, but then, you know, there's some work. There's, you know, what I like about this is there is a hour part and there is the priest part, which is okay. So that's an interesting concept just by itself, because a lot of people today, they do believe in, and my wife hates it when I say greasy grace, got that greasy grace, great God's a goose grease. So that's what my grandmother said. Okay. So, but this concept of greasy grace where, you know, you don't have any work that you have to do. Don't you think that that's what a lot of people think?
I think a lot of people think that, yeah, he's done it all, and my contribution is filthy rags, so I might as well not even put forth an effort.
Why try?
Yeah, plus, hey, we're all saved anyway, so...
That's right.
So why try harder than I need to?
Mm-hmm. Why try harder? Put that on a t-shirt. Yeah. So, but our work...
Patent pending.
Yes, yes. So the part here, you know... you know, so like, for instance, this burnt offering, they had to bring it to the tabernacle. They had to lay hands on it. They had to kill it. They had to skin it, wash it, give it to the priest. So that was what they had to do. They had to grind the grain. They had to, you know, and so you've got a similar thing. with the peace offering. They had to open it, kill it. Well, what did they do first? Kill it and then open it. take out the kidneys and give Yahuwah the fat and the kidneys. And so then the priest had a tremendous amount of work to do. And so what else are you do you see in here, Jake, that you want to point out?
A lot of it, we don't get any of that. It's for Yahweh. It's not a sacrifice if we're gaining from doing it, right? Mm-hmm. And then, at least in the initial, right, you do gain, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you think about chess, when you do a sacrifice move, you do gain from doing that. Otherwise, you wouldn't do it. But initial, right? Every illustration is going to break down, people. You get what I'm saying?
Yes.
But yeah, you have to. It's you giving, not what am I getting out of it?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that is a great way to look at it, because so many people look at everything of what do I get out of this?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about you and I. And I think that's where a great departure has to happen when you go on this journey. And is if you find yourself starting on this journey, you're going to find that you have to reckon with that a lot, that it, you start facing the reality of so much of what you did in the name of religion. You justified by what you got out of it, what it made you feel like, and all of these things. When it comes down to it, there's some stuff he didn't care, I don't think, how you feel about it. He said, yeah, this is what you need to do.
Yeah, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, it's like what you do with your children, you know. Do you care that they're like, I don't feel like picking up my toys? Do you really care?
No, toys need picked up.
Yeah. So, but you would have compassion on them if there's an issue, and you might listen to them. And I think he does that to us too. He listens.
Right. I don't think he's as much interested in a comfort as he is in our purification, as in our growth.
Mm-hmm. Obedience.
Yeah. Yeah. And once you find that you're comfortable, it's probably not going to last very long. Mm-hmm. If you're being obedient, because it's meant to, you know, hone you in the fire. So
mm-hmm.
you're supposed to be getting pruned, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to be pruned? We should be wanting to be pruned. So we're that, you know, that bearing good fruit mm-hmm. and all that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. And then there's a concept in the scripture about this perpetual fire. And once again, I think it's Leviticus 6:13, where it says the fire must be kept burning on the altar continuously and never go out. So a perpetual fire. So why was the fire in the altar to burn continuously?
Because you always need the fire to be burning. Fire. You always have, yeah. I mean, the fire goes out, then you're out of fire.
It's
easier to keep it going than to start it from scratch again.
Exactly. And I think that is that simple concept, you know, it could be more involved than that, or it could be that simple. Those of us that have grown up where, you know, you need a fire and you got this little thing you click, it's like instant fire. They would have loved to have something like that.
Yeah.
You know, they had to work up a sweat to start a fire, and they might not start a fire. And so, yeah, it was a big deal. You didn't just put out a fire lightly.
Yeah.
And so then I do have this, but the priest, you know, so in this scripture that we read not long ago, you know, it didn't really a sled. I just realized I had
a sled.
A sled. Yes,
I've been a sled, but yes. Only once. I've repented.
Sorry, I started looking at that and then I couldn't focus anymore. So I didn't find this in scripture, but I found this to be rabbinical kind of tradition. This is what people have taught, that you know, somebody had to keep this fire burning all the time. He said, don't let the fire go out. I mean,
right.
who wants to be the guy that was like, oops, I let it go out.
Yeah.
I don't think it would be good.
No.
And nobody wants to find out what happens. And so they had the duty of keeping this fire going. And so the high priest, you know, basically his name is on all this. He's the guy that pays the checks, if you will. He's, you know, at the end of the day, and he would get up in the morning and he would make sure, hey, did that guy last night that had duty, did he do his job? And if he didn't, they would pour the hot coals on him and wake him up, just almost like this. And of course... I have to play it back here. You missed this.
I smell cookies.
Stop, drop, and roll.
Right. Wait, you mean it's not run fast and get oxygen into that flame?
So my children hated that video, but I had to include it. So, and I'm not saying I endorse Jack Black, and do I think he's a, you know, somebody that I want to idolize.
You're not looking up to Jack Black?
No. But did I laugh when I watched this? Yes, I did. I did laugh. So, you know, but that's probably how you wake up if you're dead asleep and somebody throws hot coals on you.
Yeah, if you're mine. Yeah. I mean, if I was camping mm-hmm. and someone was supposed to be watching the fire, I think I might wake someone up that way. Sure.
And I think that you would probably, natural reaction is probably to get up and run.
Yeah.
So, and especially dead asleep, you don't really know what's happening, but you know this hot and you're trying to do something about it, and that, you know, that could see that being yeah. your first reaction.
I do not condone violence.
No, we condone burning people. And also, you know, you probably would get made fun of if you're that guy. You would never live that down. Like, oh, you remember that time you fell asleep and you got lit on fire? You know, you would.
The things that we rednecks find funny.
Yes. Yes. So, but you know, this whole concept of this perpetual fire, it's kind of like cooking a brisket. You know, if you've ever stayed up all night cooking a brisket over hot coals, you know, you have to pay attention to it. So, but we are going somewhere with the perpetual fire. So the high priest comes in to check on the fires, and he might come as a thief in the night. So that's kind of what we see here in Revelation 16:15. Would you read that?
See, I am coming like a thief. Blessed is the one who remains alert and doesn't lose his clothes. He will not have to go naked and let others see his shame.
Well, that's good. So nobody wants to see that.
No. So it's almost like, let's see. The one who remains alert doesn't lose his clothes. So the one who doesn't remain alert probably loses his clothes somehow.
And why do you think he would lose his clothes?
Perhaps they were burnt off of him.
Maybe so. Burnt off, and he shucked them as fast as he could because, you know, these were not clothes. Do you think these clothes were flame retardant?
They had all the chemical flame retardant of the day, I'm sure.
Which was none.
None, right.
So, yes, a little bit of fire on these babies, and I'm sure they went right up. There was no problem. And they're in a desert setting. It's dry. Relative humidity is low. Yeah, it didn't take much to light yourself on fire if you wanted to.
And then everyone's seeing you naked. And they're like, oh, you're the naked guy. You must have been asleep at the wheel there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, but I thought this was an interesting concept to tie these two together, these two concepts. And I believe that when Yeshua says these words, people may have had that understanding about the high priest, and they've heard about these stories about some guy going naked for this very reason. And then it ties right back to the parable of the virgins about being ready, because he is going to come back like a thief in the night, but he's not like a thief in the night to the virgins that were prepared. They're ready. They mm-hmm. know he's coming back. They're anticipating it. They're ready.
Yeah.
And don't you think that's a difference?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, the thief aspect is I don't sit up and know when the thief is coming kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And if you're always prepared, then then you're ready for that whenever the thief does come in.
Right. And I hate to keep going back to it, but you know, this is going to be dated at some point, but there's this virus thing that happened. And, yeah, it was kind of a big deal. You may have heard about it, you know, even in the past, you'll probably talk about this. And, those that were prepared, no big deal. You know, there are people that had put money in silver and gold, physical possession. They put money, they had cash on hand. They had food supplies and food reserves, and they had go bags prepared, and they had a plan, they were prepared, and it wasn't too big of a deal, as opposed to the other people who clearly went into panic mode,
right?
Because they're like, oh my gosh, I made fun of all those people that did that before.
Right.
And what do? They go out and do that very thing that they had made fun of.
Yep.
Which is kind of ironic.
Yeah.
But it is kind of a rabbit trail, but not really, because it's about being prepared.
Yes.
So, and it shouldn't sneak up on us. So I made this really big, I guess, for the seniors out there in the audience. Hope you can see that without glasses.
This is the only slide you'll be able to read.
So Jake and I both can take off our glasses. At least I can. Now, can Jake? I don't know. But I can read that without my glasses.
Yeah, the top is, if I squint, I can see the top one. But yeah, I can see that.
That's good. That's good.
I'm just as surprised as you that I could see it, though.
So when I do take my glasses off at the eye doctor, I do often go, I might be blind. You know, or sometimes I will mess with them, and they'll go, like, can you read that top letter, which we already know, everyone already knows it's E.
Right.
Like, why don't you change it at some point?
But, yeah.
And so I'm always like, is that M?
You know what? Literally just got my eyes done a little while ago. Could not see the E.
Oh, yeah.
The lady had to stick four fingers in front of my face. She's like, do you see that? It's like, yes, you're 2 inches in front of my face. I'm clear. I can see that. I'm not a dummy, lady. No.
And I am conscious.
Yeah. But no, thankfully, I could see the four fingers right in front of my
face. That's good. She didn't break out the smelling salts and try to revive you.
No.
That's good. So anyway, but it is our duty to keep this fire going. And so, you know, my question before you, and that I came to the conclusion after all this, is there fire on your altar? And how well do you tend that fire? Because that is something we're supposed to do. So going back to the original concept of there are rules, there are house rules when you go into someone's house. And so going into Yahuwah's house, he's got rules. We got to follow him. And one of these is having this fire perpetually ready and burning and going. And to have a fire, you got to have fuel.
Yes.
And so that means that. And so generally in my life, if there's going to be a fire, somebody had to go chop the wood. There was some work to prepare that fire. And just like this, there's work that we have to do to prepare that fire inside of us, and we have to put things in order, and they go in a certain way in a certain place. And that's what all this to me, that's what I got when I read this, is I was supposed to work on the inside workings of my own altar, because let's face it, you know, we talked about the tabernacle, you know, our bodies being a tabernacle, and how they're temporary skin covers.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're right. It's a good point that there is this prioritization, an order to how you go about it. And Yahweh is not an author of chaos; he's an author of order. And if you do the things in order, then it works out.
Mm-hmm. And I have known people in my life that you know, I think at different times they were put in my life because I had something to tell them. And, you know, and I realized one of the things that I had to tell these particular people were they needed to get their private life in order. And it's this concept. They were afraid to be by themselves, and they were afraid to deal with the garbage that they had. And we all have garbage. Stuff's happened to all of us. And you have to sit down and take care of that stuff and clean your house, clean the altar, put it in order, and know what's there. Take inventory, of what's there, what you need, how to proceed, and that requires you being alone with yourself and thinking, and being alone with the Father, and He'll help you clear that out. But you have to be willing to take that step. And I think in today's world, too many, and that goes back to what we're seeing in our society today. People are being forced in some ways to be alone, to set some time apart, and they should be working on their altar and in the tabernacle inside of them. But are they? I don't know.
Right. Yeah. In your free time, are you putting effort into building and keeping your fire going?
Mm-hmm. And I ended up walking away from some of those friendships because I got so frustrated at the end. I felt like I was in their life to try to help show them some of these things, and they couldn't accept it. They couldn't listen. They couldn't understand. They couldn't process, and they filled their life with so much busyness and garbage and junk. They filled it with all the wrong things. They filled it with, as we read later about, seeing if you could read my mind, but you couldn't. So, strange fire. So
okay.
They fill their life with strange fire.
Yeah.
Unauthorized fire. And so that definitely comes up here in the Torah soon. But it goes back to what you said about there's a particular way, a particular fashion it's supposed to be. And, you definitely don't want to build it on with strange fire.
Right. Yeah. And, another thing that comes to mind is you don't want to, people tend to like save up all their, well, I'm not going to read all week and then I'll read all of it like at once or something like that. Whereas we should be constantly stoking the fire. Mm-hmm. And when you do it like all at once, it's like you're throwing big logs on the fire. You're trying to start your fire with these big logs. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't, you got to start with the little sticks and then the little bit bigger sticks. And then, that's how you grow a fire. Mm-hmm. And to a point where it can burn those big logs and keep going.
Yeah. But it might be fun to watch you try to start with the big stump.
Yeah.
And in the fireplace and see you try to build a fire. Light that with a match.
Yeah.
Good luck. So, or rub two sticks together and see if you can start it on fire.
Yeah.
That'd be impressive. If you can do that, send us the video of that. Of the success. We don't want to see it fail.
Rubbing sticks together and lighting a big stump on fire.
Yes. And like one take, one try, without cheating, without using any kind of accelerant.
Right.
So, bottom line is, I kind of wanted to close it with this, and it's kind of what we see in the world today. So, somebody left this with me. I saw this somewhere, probably on some social media site, and it really spoke volumes to me about in the concept of the Passover, where we have the blood on the doorpost. Yahuwah doesn't check to see who's in the house. There's no check to see who's in the house. Are they worthy? What he did is he checked to see if there was blood on the doorpost. And so none of us is worthy. And so anyway, I just thought that was an interesting concept that really spoke to me that week that we were dealing with this Torah passage. I know it's kind of like, does this fit in there? Not completely. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I think we're talking about the sacrifice, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was given in the tabernacle that was Yeshua, and I think it fits.
Yeah.
It works.
But I do think it's an interesting concept that that I hadn't thought much about, that it's not like he was peeking in the door to go, no, you haven't been good. It was the fact that they had been obedient, and they did what he said.
Yeah.
And that's what they're looking for, because we know there were pagan people that had watched all these things that had happened, and they're like, hey, what are they doing? Hey, what are you doing that? And they explain, they're like, I'm going to do that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to try that out. That sounds good. Whatever you say. You say that's what I'm supposed to do, I'm going to do it. And I think that is something we're going to see again. You know, the Bible does tell us there's going to be this greater exodus that's going to occur, and it's going to make this first exodus look like nothing. And so I think that the time that we're living in is a time in which people are getting prepared and getting prepped for that concept, which is hard for us to imagine because we have a really good life here in America.
Yeah, but we do see that it is possible to be put in a position where you better get inside or something bad could happen, right?
Right. And just look at how quickly things started to change, just with the stock market crashing and falling, and then it started going back up. And, you can see how there's
volatile.
There's a very thin line between civilization, if you can say that together.
You can.
Okay. And chaos, you know, it just doesn't take, it's not, that line is not very big or wide. It's a pretty fine line.
Yeah.
So, but, I think to wrap this up, to kind of go back to what we were talking about, I think the main thing I wanted to leave you with, was this concept of this, perpetual fire, and to work on your own fire and to make sure that you keep that fire going inside. So I think that's about all I had to say. Jake, what do you want to add to kind of wrap it up?
No, I a lot of good points in there, and we hope you guys can learn something from it, or take it and use it somehow. And we don't know everything, so give us your input as well. And yeah, just keep that fire going.
Yep. All right. Well, once again, we always thank you for tuning in and listening to Shabbat Lounge. And this is Matt and
Jake.
We're signing off. Thank you.